Yep.
It is 4:00, and we will start this work session of the Board of Education on April 25th, 2023. All five board members are present, as well as Suzanne Caressa, our Director of Human Resources and Superintendent, and Frank Schofield, and we always appreciate Rachel being with us. Today we're going to discuss the district's FTE allocation process and formulas, and then we'll turn the time over to the superintendent to get started on that.
Okay, well, thank you for being here for this conversation. 8 years ago, the way this started is it was time to allocate FTE or our funding for teacher positions to the schools, and as we talked, I went to the directors and said, okay, what's our formula? We realized we really didn't have an established, consistent process for allocating FTE to schools based on enrollment. So that first year, Dave Long, Suzanne Caressa, and I started working on establishing a process for that. And Suzanne has borne the greatest load for this work over the last several years. We've tweaked it a little bit most years. I think the last 2 years it's been pretty stable. But we looked at what other districts have done, we looked at what we thought were appropriate class sizes, and we looked at what our funding allowed with the revenue we bring in from the state with the WPU, and how much that we could allocate toward staffing. With all of that, we established a series of formulas and a process for determining the FTE that's needed. We've made slight revisions based on feedback from principals. When they said, well, here's something that we would like for you to take into account, would you revisit this? We sat down, walked through it, and we've made some modifications at all levels, both the elementary, the middle, and the high school. So the main thing that I wanted to do this evening is to make sure that you all, as board members, even if there are still questions about the line-by-line elements in the spreadsheet, that you're aware that there is a process that's used consistently. The goal with this was that it could be transparent, so principals could always know how FTE is allocated, they know what questions are being asked and what numbers drive those allocations, so they can then explain that to staff when there are questions that come up as they're creating the master schedule. So we'd like to just briefly go over that. Suzanne has materials that she'll hand out to you. If you would like to, at a later time, go row by row to understand each of the calculations, we can set up a time to do that. We weren't sure that there really would be time to get into that level of detail in this meeting, but if you would like to do that afterwards, just let me know. We can do that. So I went over this with our LEA leadership last week, and we did that just row by row so they could understand the process also. So with that, we'll let Suzanne walk us through it.
You received an electronic copy, but if it's easier for you to look at a hard copy, I brought one. And we'll start with elementary. The process for elementary is different than secondary. So let's get you familiar with the elementary process and then we'll jump into the secondary. For elementary, what we do, we start with the enrollment of each class or each grade level at the end of the year. So on the day that we take the cohort enrollment, we just plug in that second column, cohort enrollment. Kindergarten, of course, we have to adjust once we get kindergarten registration numbers, and these numbers have now been adjusted with kindergarten registration. When we're looking at projections, we are using a district ratio of 1 to 27. We don't intend to staff kindergarten and first grade at 27. We do think that 27, 28 is reasonable in second grade, third, fourth, and fifth grade. We're looking probably 29, 30. There's a point in time where we also have to say, where can we add additional FTE based on class sizing? So we do have some adjustments established for class size reduction. We look at determining, so taking that cohort, dividing it by that district ratio of 1 to 27, and then we'll get the number of FTE by formula. K Kindergarten is different this year because we've gone to full-day kindergarten. So we have to calculate that a little bit differently. If you look at that top line, you can see our rounding number. So if we get that FTE by formula, the fifth column over, when we see those numbers, so on Adams and kindergarten, you see 1.89. If you go up to that top line, you see at 0.25, we're going to increase that. And that should be, that increase by 0.5 FTE should be out now. I'm sorry, I overlooked that with the full day kindergarten. So for our 1.89, we would round that to two kindergarten classes, full kindergarten classes. On 1.93, you can see that the rounding number is a 0.25 for first grade, so that rounds up to two FTE. On a second and third grade, we're looking at a 0.5, so you can see that that 1.44 gets rounded down to one. That 1.74 gets rounded up to two. Then on fourth and fifth grade, we're looking at 0.75, so that 1.48 gets rounded down to one. And then that 2 stays at 2. That's going to give us a class size by formula. And when we get that class size by formula, we're now going to make a decision as to whether or not that class size is feasible. And if not, we'll add a class size reduction FTE. So if you go to that second grade, that 1.44, remember the rounding was 0.50, so we went down to 1. That gives us a class size of 30, a class size average of 39. We're not going to staff second grade at 39, so we add a 1 class size reduction, and now our class size in second grade is at a 19.5. It's marked in red because it's under 20, and anytime we're under 20, we're wanting to watch that enrollment to make certain it doesn't get too small, and to look to see if we need to make adjustments if that pattern, if that enrollment doesn't hold. You can also see then in that fourth grade, highlighted in yellow, we're not going to staff class sizes at 40. So we add a class size reduction, and now that class size is at 20. One other thing that you should make note of is on K1, you see those columns in orange. So now we've got the class size with class size reduction funds, and now we're going to make a determination as to whether we're going to add an additional Title I intervention FTE. So with full day kindergarten, at if the class size is 23 or higher, we're going to add a Title I intervention. At first grade, if the class size is 20 or higher, we're going to add a Title I intervention. The reason that the first grade is lower than the kindergarten is because first grade is teaching different subjects throughout the day, where where kindergarten is teaching, repeating the subjects the second half of the day, not the first, they don't have different subjects throughout the full day. So now we get their adjusted class size of 17 and 17.3. If you follow that column, that class size with Title I intervention all the way down, you can see that Adams, it school-wide class size average is 20.2. When you get over to that orange column, I'm sorry, that blue column, that tells us the number of FTE they will have for this next school year. And then the remainder of the columns just give us a comparison to what they are staffed currently. So we can see the difference between where they will be next year and where they are this year. That formula follows every school except for Hillcrest. And Hillcrest, we know we're going to put 2 FTE in every grade level for Portuguese and 2 FTE in every grade level for Spanish. And then you can see where those class sizes are. So you can see that we get more class sizes that are below that 20 mark. And we will watch those to see how far below that 20 mark they go. But it gets difficult to combine when you only have two sections, because when you have an 18.5 and you combine those, you're now at a 37. And 37 is rough in elementary. So Hillcrest is the only one that's formula is different, but the other schools' formulas all remain the same.
So they don't have Title I funds available for them either, do they?
Correct.
Okay.
If you go all the way down, you can see that our target average class size is K-5 is 27. With these projections, our average class size K-5 next year will be 25.1. And you can then see that with our average class size without title in K-1 is 23.74. But when we're adding that title FTE, we're able to have an average class size in kindergarten and first grade of 18.99. If you follow that further over to the right, you can make a comparison as to where we are this year and where we will be next year. And you can see the difference in our FTE. So we're actually down 3 FTE in our first and fifth grade. That's due to enrollment decline. You can see that our kindergarten is up from 9 to 18. That's due to full day kindergarten. You can see that our Title I FTE went from 7 to 8. And you can see that our kindergarten OEK went from 5 to 0 because that's no longer available with full day kindergarten. So we see that overall we're up 2 FTE this year over last year. But when we look at the general FTE, we're up 6. That's not a big concern financially because we're going to get that funding for those 9 FTE in kindergarten.
Title I fund, is that stable from year to year? I mean, based on the formula, would we get Title I increases, decreases, or is that pretty stable?
And the dollar amount will fluctuate based on percentages and enrollment, but it doesn't fluctuate or it hasn't been fluctuating to the degree
that we
that we need to
change it. Thank you.
Okay, so that's quick overview on elementary. What questions do you have?
How does this affect our teachers that have been teaching over the past year?
So once we have our
calculate, we move around.
Once we have our projected FTE, so Adams is going to be told that they have 14 FTE, where last year they had 12. So now I'm looking at that second blue column and that far right gray column. You can see that Bridger's going to have 22 FTE next year, where this current year they're at 19.5. You can follow that all the way down. So when there is a school that's going to have fewer FTE next year than this year, we call that a collapse. So we take those collapsed teachers and look to see where we will have openings, and we work to secure them a position. After we've secured our teachers who have an expectation of employment, then we're able to determine where our remaining vacancies are and we can begin hiring.
Class size reductions, K-1, would we envision going to second grade with class size reduction? Is there value in doing that? Is there financial means to
with
do
the Title
that?
One?
Well, the
class size reduction can be used at any of the grades.
I guess what I'm asking is, as a district, is that a priority for us to get the second grade class sizes down, whatever means possible?
It hasn't been as much of a priority. We work to keep it within the ratios that we've set.
Right.
Part of that is to make sure that as we look to lower class sizes, we are still working within the budget that we have.
Right.
While also allowing us to put general funds towards compensation packages, et cetera. Lowering class size is an extremely expensive endeavor. So what we try to do is make sure that our class sizes are at a workable level for the teacher, which is why we go in and say, you know, 39 is too big. We're going to add another section. And if we get in the middle, kind of in between, we're saying, well, it's not high enough to add another section, but it's higher than we'd like it to be. You've given class size reduction aids. in the past, so there's additional aid support.
That's how you.
For a teacher.
We have to take into consideration what it divides to.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, sometimes when you get to those schools that have two sections and you're at 38, you really don't have any choice but to divide.
Right.
You know, I mean, or what, you can't stay at one section, so you're gonna have two at 19. But if you have three, you know, you have some different options.
And then your space considerations too.
Correct.
I noticed both Woodruff and Wilson minus two at Woodruff, minus 1.5 at Wilson. So though that 3.5 would be offered positions in other schools if
Correct.
There's not an opening at their current school.
And those would be placed before we started hiring. So we took care of, this year for example, took care of any displaced teachers, and then went to our teachers who had been on 1 year only contracts.
No, then we go to transfers, our teachers who request transfers, and we work with them to get a transfer. Then we're able to begin our hiring process, and we take our 1 year only teachers and interview them as finalists first, before we begin to interview our new applicants, trying to move those people who have been with us into permanent positions.
So in elementary, how many new positions that weren't covered by transfers or collapses that did we hire this year?
We so far have offered 23 elementary contracts. About, I think, 9 of those were people who have been on 1 year only contracts that will move into permanent positions.
And the rest were retirements or?
Well, the rest of those, you can't really look at it that way because, again, remember we have 9 new kindergarten sections.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So when you start to say,
how
many separations do you have? And then you say, how many hires do you have? Those numbers don't line up.
Especially this year.
For a variety of reasons. And so that can be you have 1 year people going out and you don't have the funding for that. That can be you have a teacher that's moving into a principal. That can be that you have additional trust lands money that's going to come to it. That can be that a school has decided rather than using their school designated title funds for aids, they want to use that for a title FTE. So there's lots of reasons, there's lots of things that make a determination on the contracts that you're offering, and they don't line up with your departures. Mm-hmm. Our departures on elementary, we had 8 resignations and 3 retirements on an elementary level.
And you mentioned also the school making decisions. What decisions do individual schools have to make regarding FTE, like using trust lands or Title I or that kind of thing? Are they given much decision making on their own, or?
When we give them an FTE number, that 14, we have had times where a principal will come and say, rather than doing the 3-3-2-2-2-2, I might want to do, you're not going to get a 1 and a 2, but if those were 3-3-3-2-3-2, they might shift a bit depending on what they know about that cohort.
Or kids.
Mm-hmm. Elementary, really all they have available to them would be title and trust lands. They don't usually use their trust lands for an FTE. Secondary schools very frequently use their trust lands for an FTE. Elementaries have started to use some of their FTE, their title for FTE, because of the difficulty of hiring the number of aides that they want. But really, if they can't hire an FTE and get those class sizes pretty small, they still have a preference for aides, unless the group of students is so difficult that they feel they need to split that out further.
Thank you.
Sounds very familiar.
So I noticed at Hillcrest with the language program there, we got 66 kids going to kindergarten, but if you took any of those other years and added the Spanish and Portuguese, it's quite a bit more than that. Do we pick up a lot of kids after the first grade or after kindergarten that come into that, those language programs? Because, I mean, like this year, we were anticipating 66 and we'll have 82 kids combined in the two language programs. It's, you know, 20%, 30%.
We have seen that because we would, because you would have people who would bus to Bridger or bus to Hillcrest. We are seeing a closer connection between our kindergarten and first grade and DLI with everything being in the same building than we did previously. Because now parents are looking at kindergarten at Hillcrest as the entry point into first grade DLI. Whereas previously, they might choose to do kindergarten at their neighborhood school and then go to DLI, but you didn't see as tight of a connection. So we're seeing less of a difference between kindergarten and first grade than we did before, but previously, yeah, we would see a good number of students come into first grade who had not been there in kindergarten at school.
Yeah. Looks like we're going to still have some.
What was our kindergarten registration this year compared to last year? We have the numbers.
Significantly.
85.
Wow.
We're up.
85?
Yeah, so we had 85 registrants. Yeah, we had 85 new registrants for kindergarten, taking into account that every student who's in our preschool is automatically enrolled in kindergarten. So these are 85 students who had not participated in our preschool who are now enrolled in kindergarten. So our numbers, our kindergarten numbers have gone up.
We're spreading that around, I would think. All schools are
well, yeah, we don't spread it, but yeah.
Hopefully that's where they live.
No.
One way you might be able to assess that, Larry, would be to look at the first grade cohort.
Okay.
Because that's just the kindergarten students right now advanced to first grade. So you and the kindergarten numbers are adjusted now with registration. So you could see that in Adams, it's about the same, but you could look at Bridger and say, so far they've picked up 13 additional kindergarten kids, Ellis 14,
Hill
23.
Wow.
You can see that Wilson's down. You can see that Woodruff's down. That doesn't necessarily mean it will remain that
way. Right.
Because our kindergarten early registration isn't full registration.
Yeah.
What do we get 80% of them to do that so we have an idea, or historically what percentage do pre-register so we know what to plan for?
There's a formula that Jed looks at to say how close does he think we'll be. So we can watch that to say, ooh, like, should we be adding now versus later?
Yeah.
And when I met with him the other day to review these, he felt like that FTE by decision gave every school some wiggle room for growth. Again, it's a projection, you know, so... but based on the formula that he has tracked over the years, we wouldn't expect to say all of a sudden we're going to need to hire 5 more teachers. But that would be a good problem to have if our enrollment went up. But it would be a difficult problem to have depending on when we learned that too. But good but difficult.
I know on the west side of Logan just recently passed. It's about close to 400 units. So probably here in the next 5 years to 10 years, you know, on the west side of Logan, you're gonna be getting a fluctuation of students coming in. So that's something to prepare for.
And sometimes, so fascinating that we've watched over these years, sometimes a housing unit will bring all these kids And other times, they come in and you say, where are all the kids? So it's, but what they are building now with smaller, well, with smaller homes on individual lots.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Behind me, I've got a bunch of kids. Their balls are coming into my backyard all the time, man. Which has not, of course, it was just a field. But suddenly we're getting, you know, more young families again, not just in a condo.
Well, the guesstimate from Wasatch was most recently about 150 children are in those units across from the railroad tracks.
And yet, we've had how many kids come?
It hasn't been anywhere close.
Well, you have no idea what the ages are.
Yeah, that's the impact. We have 20 students right now, but they could be 3-year-old siblings.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they could be moving in 3 years.
And they may stay, or they may be gone.
Yeah, that's a part.
So the nice thing is, the valuable thing for us is to recognize, okay, here's something where there is the potential for some significant growth. We have a backup plan, so if that does start to spike our enrollment, that's why we'll be putting the portables at each school as kind of some pressure release valves if we do see some spikes, and then we can make building adjustments or boundary adjustments as necessary. But it's the need to be aware of, okay, there are children there. There's the potential they could turn into students, so let's be thinking about it and watch for them.
The numbers, you know, this looks great with the class sizes. I think anything from the 25 mark is awesome for sure. Yeah, working in elementary, when they're up to the 35 mark in some classes I've seen, it's very hard for the teacher to function in that atmosphere and the students as well. The question I had too is with the nine new kindergarten sections, I know we've talked about this, that's planning on none of those kindergartens are going to be in portables. I think that's what we've talked about before, is that correct?
That's what we're working on with all the schools, trying to keep them indoors. There's one school that's talked about, you know, if we put a portable over there, if it's plumbed, can we have a preschool out there? Ellis previously had a preschool in a portable that had plumbing, so we're working with schools on that, but otherwise we're trying to keep students in the main building and put support services in the portables.
And the reason I ask that is working elementary, I see the bathrooms breaks are usually your preschool and kindergarten grades going to those, and it's caused issues where we're at because they don't have enough support staff to go and make sure that the kids get in there safely and getting back to class safely. And so I just strongly support keeping those younger grades in the buildings just for that reason, for safety reasons. So that's why I figured I'd bring it up and see.
And if you put your specials, even if you have to put like your computer class or something out in portable, then you have scheduled times where people are going in and out. Whereas if you have class out there, it's more irregular, which leads to doors getting left open and distrust of other issues.
Okay, thanks.
Do we have enough portables?
We do right now, yeah.
So that's not a cost.
No.
And sometime I'd like to see, and I can kind of know it because I know our schools, but building utilization. You know, I know that Adams is teeny tiny in the numbers, but they still have some room in their building. Some of our other schools, Ellis, has some, but not a lot.
We can scale. We have that. I can show you our building capacity.
Well, another time that would be really nice to look at how we're utilizing buildings, especially with this increase in full day kindergarten. It would just be nice to see that, and then we can bring up the okay. What about this? The gravel pit housing. And then they're going to be known as that forever.
We're seeing in Eastridge, where I live, all of my friends that have been there for 30 years with me, they're dying, they're moving, and we're getting backfill with families. Those homes are starting to fit.
And that's what's happening up here.
There are the primaries in our church of gone substantially up numbers where they were down to, you know, 20 kids. They're 35 now in those areas, in those homes. So there's a constant change going on in these different areas. So it's hard to guess what's going to be in the future.
We're seeing that here.
Yeah, but I'll bet up on you.
You look at the Riverside was built with the idea that there was gonna be so much growth in that area, that that was gonna be an elementary school. Didn't come to fruition.
Nor did the Cliffside Elementary School come to fruition.
Yeah, we got property.
We had property up there.
Sitting on the hill, yeah.
Ready to move on?
Yeah, we better look at middle school.
Okay, so this is, we'll start with Mount Logan Middle School. There are more similarities than differences in their formula, but there are some differences. So let's start on that far left column. You see that we start with the October 1 count, and then we are looking at the current number of special ed self-contained students because they get staffed out of special ed. We're looking at then at the number of students who need a 7-period schedule. Okay, I'm gonna explain the average differential, but let's keep going. So we're gonna times that by a differential. That's gonna give us a projected enrollment. So you can look at this year's projected enrollment compared to last year's projected enrollment. You can see that that's down, but you can also see on that first line that October 1 is down. When we multiply that projected enrollment by the number of periods each student needs, they need, each student needs 7 periods, then we know we need, this year currently we had 8,208 slots on the master schedule. Next year we're gonna need 7,909. When we then are going to look at what the slots for DLI will be, because they're gonna get staffed under DLI FTE, not the general FTE, we'll subtract that. That'll give us the slots needed on the master schedule. We'll divide that by our staffing ratio of 1 to 30. That will give us the number of periods needed on a master schedule. We can then divide that by 6 teaching periods that we can assign to each FTE, and then you can see the number of FTE that we need. So if you look at that second column, that's the 2023-24. This year we need, at a 1 to 30 ratio, 42.52 FTE. The board has allocated 1.65 for designated funds that will always be used, if you follow that pink over. 0.4 will always be used for orchestra, 0.5 for math, 0.5 for science, 0.25 for GT. So we'll subtract that from the 42.52 because we've already got that allocation designated. That means that we need 40.87 paid from the general funds. Let me talk to you for a minute about that blue line, that green line. We talked already about that pink line, and then I will talk to you about the difference in what gets paid for the general funds this year versus last year. So if you go up to that blue, that average differential, we know that we have fluctuation in enrollment throughout the year. So what we've done is we have taken a 5-year average. We take our October 1 count and we subtract, or we compare it to our enrollment. And the enrollment we just take on the day that we're doing these formula. So on the day that we did this formula, we had 1,154 kids. So you could see that we maintained 99.31% of our students from our October 1 count of 22-23. You can follow that all the way down for 5 years, and you can see that we then can average that. So we're not swinging too far to the right or swinging too far to the left in any 1 year, but we're trying to soften that swinging by a 5-year average. So we then can take that 5-year average and we can see that our enrollment equivalent will probably be 98.59%. That's why we go back to that 23-24 column. When we have our October 1 count, we subtract the special ed kids that will be served by special ed FTE. So we're gonna need 1,146 students. But when we look at that enrollment equivalent, we're projecting that only 1,130 of them will show up based on our enrollment trends and averages. Okay? So now, if you go to that green column, that DLI, then we're separating out DLI as an add-on, and then we're just looking at the enrollment that we have for DLI in sixth grade Portuguese, sixth grade Spanish, and doing the same thing for the seventh and eighth grade. We're subtracting those out because we know we're going to fund those DLI classes at whatever FTE they need to run. They don't always fall to that 1-to-30 ratio. So we have to be able to provide the services at the enrollment where they are. So you can see that we need 1.42 FTE for DLI by formula. Okay, so now we've got the average that we're looking at, you've got the DLI that we're looking at, you've got the board levy that we're looking at, and now you can go over to those bottom columns on the right-hand side. Find the one that's outlined in dark, and you'll see a 22-23, and then you'll see a 23-24 FTE allocation. This will tell you the difference. So you have the FTE to be paid from general funds, the FTE to be paid from the board designated funds, the FTE needed for DLI, then the board has had an add-on, supplemented that to bring them to two FTE so they can have a full-time Portuguese teacher and a full-time Spanish teacher. We do not count our ESL in our formula because it's intended to be intervention and we don't want that at a 1-to-30, so that's an add-on. So you can see then the final staffing implications in that bottom right-hand box. Last year they had 47.33 FTE. Now if you look at that and you look up here on this 22-23, you'll notice it's not the same. That's because there were FTE added through the year beyond what the projection was, and that's where your soft money FTE come into play usually. So this year they're going to have 45.52. That's going to represent a 1.18 change in FTE due to projected enrollment. They had 1.5 FTE that they funded out of soft money, that right now they don't have that soft money. And so those teachers that were on that soft money contract, we can't bring back yet because we don't have the funding source to maintain that. That means overall they have a pending FTE adjustment of 3.31 FTE, 1.81 due to enrollment.
Is there a chance for that soft money to be available?
Yes, and he's planning on it. He's planning on adding two FTE out of trust lands once he gets approval.
So that's what we're approving today.
Today. Okay.
But yeah, those funds always come in later.
So, okay.
Okay, you can see that we're staffing at a 1-to-30 ratio, but you can see their actual class size ratio is 28.96. When you put that to a student load per teacher, they're going to be responsible for 173.75 students.
So this method, does it allow us to offer the classes at the junior high and high school levels that we want to offer as far as
So
math,
that's how
language,
they know
science,
that they've got
STEM.
200. If you go over to that far left column at the top, and you see that 264.81 and that 255.09. This year they're working with 255 periods in their master schedule. They then can take from the students their class requests and determine which classes they can offer and for that 255. Period.
And aren't they encouraged if they don't have the enrollment to go recruit a few other things for their classes so that they
get an offer?
And we need how many kids in a class to make it run? Is that decided
usually
at the high
run,
school?
We like to have 20. We like to have 20 students in the class to run.
Any questions on the middle school? Okay, high school's pretty similar. Couple more variables that come into play at a high school.
This is real simple, you can tell. Figure out. And then you go to their master schedules and it's even.
Okay, so you have the same process on the left-hand side, the 2022-23 and the 23-24. Okay, so you can see October 1, special ed, the number of students who need an 8-period schedule. The average differential is calculated exactly the same. Then you have your projected enrollment times 8 periods, the number of slots on a master schedule. The high school, we staff at a 1-to-35 ratio, so that tells us the number of periods needed on the master schedule. Divide that by the 6 periods per FTE, and then you get the total number of FTE needed. Now, we know not all of those students are on campus. We have some of those students receiving their courses at BTEC and some from seminary. So we adjust and we split that 50-50. So we're not duplicating those numbers and funding for those students even though they're not on campus. This is one that we've adjusted over time because the school feels really strongly that gives them an incentive to, that helps them be able to lower class sizes when kids are off campus. But we're also trying to balance that with what's reasonable financially. So we split that with them. So we multiply out the number of kids that are going off, figure out the FTE that are provided by off-campus offerings, we multiply it by 0.50, and then we know that we're going to provide, count that 1.71 we're going to let them keep, and 1.71 FTE will be offered off-campus. We do a similar calculation with CTE because CTE is a separate funding source. Okay, but we also know that with CTE that, if you go over, then we get what we're funded for our CTE, divide that out by 6, and then get that sum. But we know most of our CTE courses don't maintain a ratio of 1-to-35. And so if we keep the 1-to-35 in CTE and they're running classes of 20 or 22 or 25, then what we see is our general courses, our core courses, go higher and higher and higher. So instead of looking at CTE at an expected ratio of 1-to-35, we're looking at our CTE courses at an expected ratio of 1-to-20. Okay, so that will allow us to staff those CTE courses without driving those core classes up. So although 8.88 of the CTE classes or of the courses will be paid from CTE funds, we'll just subtract 5.07 and not duplicate that from the general. I'm back over to the far left-hand column. Then again, you have designated funds that the board has provided. So you see that's 2.8 at Logan High. So we see that we need 44.28 FTE to be paid from general. Let's go down to the bottom right-hand corner again. So now that you see that the 23-24, this is the box that is outlined in the dark, we're going to have 44.283 FTE compared to last year, 46.160. We're going to maintain the designated funds. We're going to pay 8.875 from CTE. We're going to use that ESL intervention add-on and not harm that class size. We're going to use the DLI as an add-on. So overall, the teaching FTE needed this year is 58.12 as compared to last year 60.01. So Logan High has a change of 1.88 FTE. If you go back up to the top left-hand corner, you can see that's due to enrollment, and you can see that that's due to not maintaining 100% of students over time, although this past year they were really pretty close. Logan High spent or provided 3.61 FTE from soft money last year. So until soft money comes in, we can't bank on that. So they have 1.88 reduction in FTE due to enrollment. They have 3.61 that they can't yet make a decision on. But that means we have to ensure that we have positions for all those who have expected employment. And to do that, we're going to count on 5.49 fewer at this point in the school year.
And that's soft money with Europe and...
Europe and school land trust. So the challenge is you can't guarantee a person that's going to be available until you get the approval. And where those approvals have to come from the state and from the federal government, there are approval timelines that we don't control.
Is Europe a potential in the future? Or we have applied for it? Is that Arizona?
Utah State is the one that carries the grant, so they apply for it. They've stated that they are putting together an application. Part of the challenge is Utah's application does not, where it's a national application, does not address the same percentage of students at high risk of academic failure as the applications from other states do.
Therefore
we don't score as high with the scoring rubric. So we're still hopeful. Utah State's still hopeful. They're still submitting it, but that's part of the criteria that makes it a little bit harder.
Is that a long-term, 4-year, 5-year grant?
Usually they'll write the Gear Up grant, so it will start with like your 7th and 8th grade cohort, and then follows them through graduation.
So once we've got it, we have some stability with that money for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
For the student.
For the student.
It shifts from Mount Logan FTE to the Logan High FTE. Yeah.
Okay.
So as we approve land trust today, then they can't hire after this meeting. They have to wait for the state to also approve those or not?
What we have told them is we have asked that if they want to use these soft funds, they have to have a backup source. For it. So as soon as we approve it, because generally speaking, I have never seen a case where the state has rejected our recommendations, because generally we're very aware of what works
and
what doesn't.
Conservative and what we approve.
But it's always that hesitation, because if you did set someone up on a contract and it were not approved, then we're in the position of saying, sorry, now we have to let you go, or we're pulling that money out of other funds.
Now, the reduction in employment, my question was, is because it came to my attention, which I mentioned to you as well, that like the AP chemistry, AP physics, that those would be taught instead of every semester, semester?
Semester,
that they'd be every other semester, because that was brought up to my attention by a few neighbors whose children are taking those AP classes, and let's say they don't do so well, or they need to take that, that they're feeling that they're not going to be able to get that. And so that was the concern that was brought up to me, that to not take away from the core subjects of science, math, those core subjects. But, you know, and I guess that's the question, where do they, because the high school's deciding that they're going to take away from the science department, which I feel like they shouldn't be doing that, but that's why I'm trying to figure out why they're doing that.
So the question is one of the use of the term taking away from. So what, and as a former elective teacher, and as you know, Larry with CTE, one of the things that you do with your department is you identify, here are the courses we want to offer and here's the enrollment that we're going to need to carry them. So what do we do starting in bio and then moving into chemistry and physics? What are we doing to prepare those students? If you're 3 students away with a graduating class of 370, you should be able to find 3 students who want to sign up for AP Chem. So what our emphasis is right now, if we don't have the enrollment, then we have to make adjustments, because allowing a lower class size here means we're having a higher class size someplace else.
English socials, one year we had our social studies classes that were huge.
So what we're trying to do.
Science class size and mine's way up here.
Yeah.
And you have some issues.
So what we're trying to do to address your very point, Cole, is provide the FTE allocation early in the year. So those conversations can be had. I mean, the master schedule can get drafted early, and then teachers can say, okay, we're a little bit short of where we would like to be. Who can we recruit? What conversations do we need to have with students now to get a few more students into this class, and then it's able to carry on the master schedule and we're able to keep moving things forward.
So it's not a final, hey, this is not going to happen.
Here's our first draft of the master schedule. Okay. If there's a change we'd like to make, let's go find the students and go and make that change.
That sounds good.
If you're 10 students shy, then you got to recruit a lot of kids. But if you're 3 students shy, we can usually find a few kids to go take the class.
And then those kids in August also make their own decisions that sometimes really skews things and you have teachers hired, such as the animal at the secondary level.
But just kudos to Superintendent and Suzanne. 10 years ago, previous administration, there are times in high school teacher, I didn't know what I was teaching, therefore I didn't know what I needed to recruit to until May, sometimes mid, late May. But now we've got a formula, and we can get the FTEs out fairly early, and I...
First week of February this year.
So the ability to recruit is much greater now than it was 10 years ago. And as a teacher 10 years ago, there was a mystery of how FTEs were come up with.
Well, an equity in those FTE.
Well,
there were those years that you thought, oh, okay, why do they have smaller class sizes than this first grade class? And now we have the answers.
It's objective.
Yeah,
but also principals can explain it to teachers if they have a question.
But you were able to regroup in baseball.
Yeah, so but I didn't always get answers of them.
So we have deadlines for the land trust. When do we typically hear back?
On the
group?
We've typically heard back probably early to midsummer is when we generally get final word back. Some of it depends on how much updating they're doing to the website and how that slows things down, but that's generally when we find out.
How many teachers do we typically hire mid-summer to fill positions? Various from year to year, I'm sure, but it happens. Because we don't know about the source.
Partially also because we're a university town. And significant others are graduating and looking for employment, and then you're left to other industries' decision-making timelines and when they get a job in the summer.
It's the reality of where we're at and the industry we're in.
Or somebody has a baby and decides they can't leave that baby. Just a number of those things. Oh, FYI, I did, when I went into NSBA and I looked at the 2024 conference, it said Indianapolis, but when you clicked on it, it said New Orleans. So it is in next year's, is in New Orleans.
We'll now conclude this meeting and move to our next meeting.
That's why I thought it was New Orleans. But I clicked on this Indianapolis, and then I clicked in, and it's New Orleans.
I can give us a door to
New Orleans. I was thinking that. Well, that was mine as well.
So hopefully our lives won't be as complicated.
It's a place, but it's sure a lot warmer than Indianapolis in April.
Thanks.